I've been told I have a warm Bristolian tone to my voiceovers.
You should just try the real moneymaker. Check out number 5, please.
The Germans, and they're in trouble. Alcantara couldn't do it. Lineker probably could. And England have equalised. It's Gary Lineker. And pulling in, and it's there by David Platt. England have done it.
Welcome, everybody, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host, Adam.
Hello there.
It's your turn this week on a World Cup. What are we doing today?
Yes, it is. It's 2002, Lewis. Take yourself back.
Oh, yes. Ronaldo's redemption. Ronaldo Nazario da Lima.
Poor peasant.
It's just become...
Every time.
It's just become muscle memory now.
So apologies to listeners for last week's love fest.
I will stay away from Ronaldo this week, than that.
You just be you, mate, all right? Okay. But I can mock you for it.
You might be the only person that's ever said that in my life, so thanks very much.
True. Your wife had words. Can you not be like that? So, yes, the 2002 World Cup. Lewis, we haven't done this for a little while, so I'm going to ask because you were alive, fit and well.
This is my World Cup.
Is
I'm
it?
Throw out, as in, like, the peak
so
of...
You were
I
like
had nothing 13, else in my life.
14?
Yeah, I had nothing else going on in terms of, like, it was just football.
No women.
No women, no friends.
Fair play, could have been
no
last
life.
Week.
We are talking about the 2022, right? Not 2002.
Do you remember, Lou?
I remember a few great facts about this, or just a few things. So, obviously, Ronaldo's redemption, I've joked about it, but everything that happened in 98, my distraught heart and emotion of Ronaldo failing at the final hurdle, obviously getting that redemption and being the star in the final. We'll leave that until we actually get to the game.
Sure.
I remember that Hakan Şükür scores the fastest goal in World Cup history.
Yes.
In this tournament.
Yes.
I don't know if you have this or not. I think it's like 13 seconds.
It's 10.8.
10.8, even quicker.
Yeah.
And Turkey do remarkably well.
They do.
I think that's in the third place playoff, isn't it?
And only in their second tournament.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I knew that Turkey had done really well. Obviously, the host, South Korea, do really well. Gus Hiddink. Yes, it is Gus Hiddink. They do remarkably well. There's another team that do unexpectedly well. Is it USA in Senegal, maybe, quite well.
Oh, Senegal, yeah.
Senegal do well. I think they knock France out in the group stage.
Technically, they do. They beat them in the opener, don't they?
That's right, yeah. And yeah, so France have a terrible tournament. I remember that. This tournament, Miroslav Klose scores lots of goals.
He does, as he did generally in World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. He had a real fetish for the World Cup. Which way round is it with Thomas Müller? He's the Euros top goal scorer. No, he's the World Cup goal scorer, but he doesn't score in the Euros. Is that right?
Klose is the World Cup goal scorer.
No, I think Klose overtook Ronaldo. I'm going to say Müller overtook Klose.
Hey, I want you to come back on a public.
I shall.
I want this public apology to be played with background music.
Okay, so I'd like to formally apologise to Mr. Adam Maxwell.
Thank you.
On my misquoting of facts. I can, in fact, say that I was right in spirit, but not in fact.
No, that's not an apology.
So, Thomas Müller is not, obviously, the World Cup goal scorer ever. Everybody knows that, obviously, but I didn't. However, he does have that weird thing. So, he scored 10 goals at the World Cup, but he's never scored in the Euros.
Is that right?
Boy,
he went close against England, didn't he?
Really, that was just a very long run-up for us to relive that moment. He's through on goal. He's clear. He's clearly a twat. Thomas Müller has that weird thing where he can score in World Cup, but not in Euros. But anyway.
I think the important point about that whole segment, mate, is that I was right.
Sure. We'll move swiftly on.
You don't become number 4 in the world in Quiz Up and World Cup trivia and get schooled by some...
Upstart. Oh, this is the other thing. Not to do with the World Cup in terms of facts, but I remember secondary school, letting us watch one of the games in the morning.
Yeah.
We gathered in the PE hall to watch an England game. I want to... Oh, who would it have been?
Nigeria.
Yes, thank you.
Because it was the worst game.
There we go. Yeah. So we got to gather in the sports hall.
Yeah, it's probably 0-0, wasn't it? Typical England. The whole country stops and they don't turn up. But yes, that leads on nicely, actually, because Japan and South Korea being the hosts was controversial for a few reasons, but one of the main reasons was that the European TV audience would be secondary.
Oh, yeah.
Which is unusual. So you had games, only a few of the group games. By the time it went to the knockout stages, they got to a more kind of meaningful time slot.
Yeah.
But yeah, group games were played at like 6 and 8 in the morning,
right,
UK time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so one of England's games, as you mentioned, was the Nigeria game, which was played at 8 o'clock in the morning kickoff.
That's right.
It wasn't particularly well thought through.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. The 2002 FIFA World Cup, also branded rather inventively, Korea-Japan 2002.
Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue, does it? It's not USA 94.
They've not really added a lot there.
No.
But it was the first to be held outside of the Americas or Europe. So the first World Cup in history, which we've covered a lot. And this is the first World Cup to be held outside of Europe or the Americas.
Yeah, yeah.
And is also the first to be jointly hosted by more than one nation.
Oh, yes. Yes. I remember that being a really big talking point at the time, actually. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
It's not happened since, and it will happen again. Do you remember why?
Yeah, it's going to be... Poland and...
No, you're thinking Euros.
Oh.
Euros have done it. The second World Cup to be jointly hosted will be the next one.
Has that been...
America, Mexico, Canada.
So
that is the only time it'd be repeated. So 2002 was the first and only time that it's been hosted by more than one nation. A little bit of a story behind it, really. Initially, South Korea, Japan and Mexico presented three rival bids.
Strange.
Mexico bloody love it, don't they?
Yeah, they do love it.
Do you just want to take every one? Frick's sake.
I think if we said to Mexico, you can't actually play in the tournament, but you can host every one, they'd go short.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is our fiesta.
So with Mexico regarded as a long shot, no kidding, they've already had two.
Yeah.
The battle to host the tournament came down to South Korea and Japan. There was a big standoff in FIFA, lots of politics and all the rest of it. And basically, FIFA was split pretty much down the middle, South Korea and Japan. And so the two countries were faced with taking a gamble and having no World Cup or coming together and having a shared World Cup.
Oh, interesting.
And so they reluctantly both chose to go along with co-hosting in the fear that they would lose.
They'd miss out.
But it was that close. So they agreed to co-host. Interestingly, little tidbit of information. The General Secretary of South Korea's bidding committee, Song Yong-shik, stated that FIFA was interested in staging some matches in North Korea in order to aid Korean reunification.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
Could you imagine?
You imagine if you were in the group drawn in North Korea?
Yeah. That would be a nervy bus ride, wouldn't it? through the no man's land. Yeah.
The England team were never seen again.
They entered the demilitarized zone and never reappeared.
So thankfully, someone sensible ruled that out and it just became South Korea and Japan. You'll like this, mate, because the footballs being used at the tournaments actually was quite a big thing since 1970,
right?
With the Adidas ball, but it became much more of a kind of a thing.
Yeah,
the World Cup ball and the bloody opening ceremony for the ball. And
yeah,
all that kind
sure.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
So the 2002 World Cup was the last to use the same ball for all matches.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How weird.
Yeah. So in 2006, continuing to the present, a ball with the same technical specifics but different colours has been used in the final.
I did not know that. That's a lovely little...
I didn't know
that.
That's
a lovely bit.
So a different ball for the final is used now.
Yeah.
Since 2006.
That's really interesting.
So that's interesting. Italian goalkeeper wasn't happy though. Gianluigi Buffon.
You're so good with names.
Gianluigi. I don't even know this guy. I don't know him.
Gianluigi.
Gianluigi Buffon. Thanks, mate. He called the ball a ridiculous kiddies bouncing ball.
I'm just thinking of those. Do you remember those shoot balls that like the floaters?
Yes,
that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
of.
Exactly.
You wait until Buffon hears about the Jabulani in a few years' time.
So he wasn't happy along with a number of other players actually who said the ball was ridiculous and a bit flyaway.
Right?
Yeah, he was unhappy. And also, 2002 World Cup was the last one to use the golden goal rule.
So scrapped after this.
Short-lived.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so only 6 years of major tournament use until it was scrapped.
Because Euro 2000 was won on the golden goal, wasn't it? David Trezeguet scores.
Yes, it was, and so was 96.
That's right,
so, two in a row. So I don't know why, I thought it was great.
What's
drama.
Your opinion on the golden goal?
I quite liked it.
I think it definitely stops the stalemateness of extra time. Most games, when they go to extra time, it's two teams that are desperate not to lose.
Well, just prepping for penalties, aren't
they? It does. I'm not against it, but I also do understand that it's a bit unfair that you can just get sucker-punched in 2 minutes.
Is it more unfair than a penalty shootout?
I don't know. It's the argument of, like, a football game over 90 minutes, generally speaking, the best team wins, whereas if it was you know, first goal wins. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess there's a debate either way, isn't there? Yeah. But I mean, my fond memory of the golden goal is Euro 96 semi-final. This is a tangent, but it's worth it. Where the England-Germany, late in extra time, it's golden goal and Kuntz rises highest in a corner, but someone in front of him has pushed Sol Campbell. Would it have been Sol Campbell, 96?
Would have been early, but...
No, not sure. Anyway, he pushed the defender out of the way.
Yeah.
And the ball goes in. Wembley is, like, absolutely grief-stricken. Mm-hmm. And then within, like, 2 seconds, the referee comes on screen and he's ruled it out. There has never been a celebration like that moment. It was absolutely brilliant. The German disappointment.
It's the Thomas Müller for that generation.
It was great.
There's nothing more satisfying. That's the good thing about VAR these days. Yeah. It does ruin in the moment, but when it works for your team, you get to rub it in the face.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so
I love VAR for that. Yeah, love it. So back to 2002. All seven previous World Cup winning nations qualified.
Ooh, that must be the first time in a while.
Well, it broke the rule. It broke the record for most previous champions at a tournament. Still stands to this day.
That's good.
So all seven. Can you name seven, mate? Come on, a little bit of a pop quiz of where we've been.
Brazil, Germany, Italy, Uruguay. No, not Holland.
You want it so much.
I really wanted it. I was like 74.
No. Come on, two more.
France and the remaining two, England, of course. I can't believe I left England until penultimate. And then Argentina.
Very good. So all seven were at the 2002 World Cup. Amazingly, 20 venues, stadiums were used.
I remember there being loads.
So I guess because both countries had prepared and they wanted to use them, so they just spread the games out, including the Sapporo Dome. Do you remember what was important or significant about the Sapporo Dome? It hosted England-Argentina.
Okay.
That wasn't what was important, although you could argue that.
Sure.
No, it was indoors.
I remember there being controversy about that as well, because people were talking about, like, the air pressure. It makes the ball fly differently. I mean, you're talking about very fine margins. I can't believe it actually made that much of
a
difference.
It was a huge... It was classic, like, Sky Sports World Cup report. What should we talk about?
Yeah, sure.
They had, like, diagrams and stuff. It was impressive. The pitch came in similar to the Tottenham Stadium, I think. But obviously, this was 2002.
Yeah, way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, so amazing. They kind of wheeled this amazing pitch in, and then it was an indoor stadium. So the only game that's been played in an indoor stadium.
That's great.
And World Cup history. And what a game. The grudge match of England-Argentina. Worth mentioning, England-Argentina, obviously 4 years before, Argentina knocked England out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's controversially, but it was certainly spicy.
Bitter, yeah.
Obviously, Beckham getting sent off.
I think ultimately Argentina were better than us in that game.
The penalty misses. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Sol Campbell's ruled out. Goal and all the rest of it. So it was a great classic England drama night.
Yeah.
You're probably right. And we weren't going anywhere in the tournament.
No, exactly, yeah.
So it's one of those. So 4 years later, John Motson uttered the legendary words, "Hold the cups and saucers at home."
Yes, Motty. There's nobody like him.
I love that because in John Motson's perfectly middle-class world,
we're
all holding
of course
cups
we are.
And teas and saucers.
He still thinks that's what the players get at halftime. I just love it. But down the fine china, everybody.
That's it, yeah. Iconic commentary as Beckham smashed the penalty home.
There was something that was like... being exercised of a ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Beckham scoring against Argentina, us winning the game.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, oh, that was like a taste of, we can change our narrative.
Yeah.
Which in my lifetime, that was the first time that it had been like, oh, we're not just victims of, we always lose this way, we always go out.
And went on for a little while after that. But that was a little inside. But yeah, especially with Beckham being what he'd been since 98 and becoming the England captain. I mean, he must have been the most popular player in the country at that point.
And what a journey from being villainised 4 years earlier.
Incredible. It's a great story. So yeah, England ultimately got out of the group and we'll come to how they failed. But South Korea were the main story. They, as co-hosts, managed to reach the semi-finals, as you mentioned. And this is impressive because you kind of think, oh, they probably played nobody. They beat Poland, a decent Poland team, Portugal, Italy, and Spain.
Oh, stop it. They're doing it on expert mode. I love that.
Incredible.
That's so good.
So, yeah, they only failed to Germany in the semi-final. So, yeah, incredible run for Gus Hiddink and that team. They're the only Asian team to reach the semi-finals of the World Cup.
Oh, is that right?
So, on to where you know you're heading, Ronaldo.
Here we go.
So, he had a great tournament. And you've got to remember from your, you know, kind of biography last week, he wasn't just coming back from 98. He was coming back from two career-threatening injuries.
Yeah, exactly.
So really, 98 was a distant memory for him. His redemption, he would have said, that it was about the knees.
Yeah, exactly. It was being able to step back on a football pitch.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like history tells you, it's like, oh yeah, 98 to 2002, nothing happened. Like the guy went through hell and back just to be able to get to this point. He scored his sixth goal to knock out Turkey in the semi-finals. A game that's actually more remembered for something else.
Is this Hakan Ünsal kicking the ball into Rivaldo?
It
and
is.
Him dropping down. It hits him in the shins and he goes down riding
it
on
does.
His face.
It does.
Well, it didn't hit Rivaldo in the face.
He disappointed with his reaction, but
the referee's assistant could not have had a better view. It is a red card.
Oh, that's sad. That's sad. He didn't deserve that.
So FIFA conducted a video review for the first time of the incident in the Brazil-Turkey game. Rivaldo and Ünsal decided to fine the Brazilian 11,670 Swiss francs for deceiving the referee.
Interesting. But there's no, obviously, a fine's a fine, but there's no real punishment. It's not like they gave him a yellow card or...
No, well, I guess that was because it was retrospective. And I guess in some sense that was the argument to bring VAR and the technology to be instant.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, maybe if they could have done it back then, they would have done it back
then.
Well,
it's interesting. I won't go on about it too much because it's next week, but there's a similar-ish occasion with Zidane's red card.
Of course,
it's a similar thing they use.
Yeah, of course they did,
because the referee misses it, but we'll get on to that next week.
Yeah, okay. So Germany, we're typically back to being Germany. They beat South Korea by the same scoreline, 1-0, to set up the Brazil-Germany final. And a lot of people were like, it's going to be a tasty final. Yeah. Germany were decent. Brazil hadn't lost. They were looking really good. Ronaldo was not necessarily back to his best, but certainly back to a world-dominating...
And that front three, it was Ronaldo, Rivaldo, and Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
Like, that is like... You could argue that might be the best front three of all time.
It's certainly up there.
Yeah.
I mean,
so difficult to argue.
Tevez, Rooney, and Ronaldo.
Hey, they're in the conversation.
I'm not even a United fan. Thought of it. So, interesting. You mentioned Ronaldinho just before we get to the match. So, did you have any memory of Ronaldinho being sent off against England?
No.
Yeah. What the heck?
This feels like we've teleported into another world.
They played 22 minutes without Ronaldinho.
Did they? What did he get sent off for?
I can't remember.
And we're off to Fratton Park, where there's been a red card. But for who, Chris Kamara?
I don't know, Jeff, has there? I must have missed that. Red card.
What has happened there? What's happened, Chris?
I don't know, Jeff. I don't know. The rain must have got in my eyes, Jeff.
Yeah,
absolutely surreal.
I need to find out what that was for. Give me 2 seconds.
Some time later.
The headline's tasty. Danny Mills reveals how he got Ronaldinho sent off in 2002 with the help of Paul Scholes.
Danny Mills.
Credit for anything.
I forgot he was there. Shut up, Danny. You're only there because Gary Neville's injured.
So here we go. Discussing the incident on the radio, Danny Mills revealed exactly what happened. After being crunched in a tackle by Ronaldinho, everyone expected there to be a standard yellow card. However, he says that Ronaldinho came in, it was a late challenge, he caught me, I went down. I was about to get up and Scholesy came over, tapped me on the shoulder and said, stay down, the ref has got a card out, stay down. So that's the reason.
Scholesy, little scallywag.
So Mills trying to take credit. Oh, he was about to get up.
Yeah,
not
shut
thanks
up,
to
Mills.
You, Danny Mills.
Danny Mills literally has built a career off of Gary Neville tripping up.
Yeah, yeah, it's
amazing.
Crazy, isn't it?
Like, who would listen to Danny Mills? But they always put that banner up, like playing the 2002 World Cup. It's like, mate.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he was a good right back.
Danny Mills is Kaiser Soze.
Kaiser Soze.
I can't hear you. Mirtes. To do the numbers in the Kangaroo. Latama Kaiser Soze. Nemirtes.
What?
Kaiser Soze. Kaiser Soze. Latama Kaiser Soze.
So there we go. So Ronaldinho was sent off. So England lost the quarterfinal 2-1. Owen put England ahead of a very good Brazil team. And we dreamed. Life peaked. And then Brazil did their thing and came back. Rivaldo scored. Then Ronaldinho scored, left Siemens flapping.
Yeah, amazing.
As he loved to do. Brazil won the game. But yeah, so Ronaldinho was suspended for the semi-final.
Wow, I had no memory of that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just before you move on, do you remember the song that the BBC used on the montage for us leaving this World Cup?
Is it Stop Crying Your Heart
Out? It is Stop Crying Your Heart Out. Oh. Still to this day, the bittersweetness of hearing that great song being teleported back to seeing Seaman just completely confused.
Beckham jumping out of the way. Was it because of his foot? Or did he just not fancy getting...
That's it, scrap the podcast. We're doing a deep dive into this now. We're going to hunt him down. David, did you jump?
Were you worried about your injury? Anyway, on to the actual World Cup final of 2002. Okay, so interestingly, again, so it'd be easy to look at history and go, well, Brazil made the final in 98, Brazil made the final in 2002. They were solid, stable, all together, like, yeah. You know, what a run they put together from 98 to 2002. They obviously got back from the plane from France and went, right, we're going to just absolutely muller everybody. They had a series of managers in that 4 year,
really?
Yeah, in that 4 year period. Isn't that incredible?
Because I obviously know that Big Phil Scolari.
Well, Big Phil ended up there. The first guy after 98, when, you know, everything kind of, is it Zagallo that was?
Yeah.
So the guy that replaced Zagallo was Vanderlei Luxemburgo, whose contract was terminated after the team were eliminated at the quarterfinals of the 2000 Olympics. So he only got 18 months.
Wow. I have no memory of that. I think he takes over Real Madrid for one season as well, Vanderlei Luxemburgo.
I mean, he's a forgotten name in football history, isn't he? Yeah. So he got 18 months. They lost in the quarterfinals of the Olympics, which I guess is relatively bad for Brazil.
Yeah, and also they take the Olympics very seriously.
Of course, yeah. He was followed by Emerson Leão, who was dismissed in 2001, 1 year later.
Wow.
After winning only 4 of 11 games in charge, and I don't know if you remember this, I remember this, and leaving Brazil at risk of not qualifying for the 2002 World Cup.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. So they were in, I think they were in 5th place, top 4 go through in the South American thing. They were in 5th place. I think they needed to beat something like Bolivia, Peru, and someone else,
like
Uruguay.
Chile or something like that.
The last game was a bigger game.
Right, okay.
And so, yeah, they got rid of him, thinking, if he loses one of those games, we don't make the World Cup. So they got rid of him.
It reminds me of that Troy meme with Brad Pitt where he's like,
he's the biggest man I've ever seen. I wouldn't want to fight him.
That's why no one will remember your name.
Emerson Leão. So, the incumbent manager going into the tournament was, as you've mentioned, Big Phil, Luis Felipe Scolari.
Yes.
Who obviously became Chelsea manager later. He favoured a different style of football from his predecessors, which he called bully boy soccer.
Is that right? Yeah. Interesting.
So Big Phil liked bully boy soccer, and he does look like the kind of guy that would be...
His name's Big Phil, for crying out loud. You can't get a more British like sounding name, can you?
Bully boy Phil. In describing the style, one journalist said the object of Philippe Scolari's tactics is to disrupt, destroy, foul, and waste time.
Wow. You don't align that with Brazil, do you?
No, you don't.
And I don't really align that with this Brazil team that go on to win.
No.
Like, I know they... like had a role for Gilberto Silva and Cleberson, who weren't creative midfielders at all. But they obviously had that front three. But yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it? I guess maybe the fact that you remember defensive players in this Brazil team
that's
is probably
true.
An indicator, because normally it's
like,
can you name the back four of Brazil 70?
Carlos Alberto.
Because he scored.
Nilson Santos, probably. And other than that, I don't know.
Point proven. So anyway, so that was the Brazil team that came in. So Brazil versus Germany for the 2002 World Cup. But interestingly, it was Germany who bullied the opening minutes.
Right.
See the link there?
Yeah, that's good.
So the first 15 minutes of the final, many people expected Brazil to kind of like just come in and smash them. Ronaldo was quiet. Ronaldinho coming back from suspension was quiet. And Germany, you know, in some ways probably could have taken the lead in the first 15 minutes, which was a real shock for people watching it. So they had opportunities to score when Bernd Schneider ran past Gilberto Silva before crossing into the penalty area towards closer.
Oh, dangerous in the air, that
top
boy.
Scorer. Interestingly, higher scorer than Thomas Müller.
Right, let's fact check that, please.
Only to be intercepted at the last minute. Closer went close again.
Oh, that's good.
Only minutes later. And as I say, Germany, there was a sense of, blimey, you know, Germany are going to score here. Like, nobody has expected that. Brazil were hot favourites, despite the fact that Germany were a stronger team. Brazil were hot favourites. Brazil obviously countered where Ronaldinho turned up. He put Ronaldo through one-on-one with Oliver Kahn.
Who has a hell of a tournament, a really good tournament.
Yes, he does. I'll come to that. But yes, he does have a hell of a tournament. So Ronaldo goes through one-on-one with Kahn. His left foot shot grazing the post before going wide to let the Germans off. On 30 minutes, Ronaldinho again played a pass through to Ronaldo, spot the pattern, who found himself with only Kahn to beat for a second time. He was unable to put enough power on the shot under pressure from Linker, and Kahn managed to save and push it wide. The first half finished with Brazil unable to take the lead despite great chances, literally seconds before the whistle went. Kleberson hit the bar with a stinging shot.
Did he really?
And then Ronaldo again had a chance when Roberto Carlos found him, but Kahn saved again to keep the scores level.
I think there's only, in my generation, there's only ever been two goalkeepers that seemed to grow when they were one-on-one with strikers. Where
Schmeichel, like,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Schmeichel and Kahn, I swear they grew an extra foot when they were one. They were enormous. Yeah. They just made them. Normally, when you see somebody go one-on-one, you think, oh, okay, here we go.
Striker's going to score.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But it was always like, with Schmeichel and Kahn, you thought, no, the advantage is with the goalkeeper, which is absurd to say, but they were so present.
Yeah. And in this tournament particularly, it's what I mentioned it now, I wasn't going to say it to them, but it sets up nicely for what happens, is Oliver Kahn was, for the first time in history and the only time in history, given the golden ball, is it?
Was he really? For best player of the tournament?
Yes.
So not just the golden, the Lev Yashin
He won that
award.
Too.
Right.
Golden ball.
No
so
way.
Who's voted the best player in the tournament? You know, obviously those first half highlights essentially is Germany started well, Ronaldo one-on-one with Kahn three times.
Crazy.
And he saves all three times.
Amazing.
And ultimately, probably one of the best finishers in the world.
Yeah.
And Kahn saves them. So Ronaldo doesn't miss them. Yeah. Kahn saves them. So he was living up to like being a vital part of how Germany were going to win the World Cup. So that sets up beautifully for what happens. But there's a little bit before that. 1 minute into the second half, Germany has a great chance to give Germany the lead when Neuville?
Oliver Neuville.
Yeah, found him unmarked from a corner kick, but his header was blocked on the line by Ed Milson.
Was it really? I don't have any memory of that either.
They should have scored in the 50th minute again when Neuville struck a free kick from long range. Brazilian goalkeeper Marcos tipped the shot onto the post. So Germany were in this game. Any kind of narrative of like, you know, oh, Ronaldo just turned up and they ran away with it.
It's a real coin toss,
isn't
it?
It's not what happened. Yeah, it was one of the better World Cup finals, actually. The game opened up with both teams with chances to score. So this was kind of like between the 50th and 67th minute all this happened. So 17 minutes. Neuville, Frings and Closer had chances sandwiched by opportunities for Ronaldo, Gilberto Silva and Ronaldinho, all in that 17 minute period. So not like kind of like, oh, that could have happened, but actual chances to score, you know, World Cup winning goals. But it remained goalless until the 67th minute, where something crucial happened to Oliver Kahn. The move actually started with Ronaldo winning the ball from Dietmar Hamann,
but to his friends he was Didi
Hamann. In the German half, he passed to Rivaldo, who struck a low shot towards goal. Kahn attempted to catch the shot, but he was unable to take it cleanly, and it rebounded into play. Ronaldo, who had followed Rivaldo's shot, took advantage of Kahn's mistake, scoring the rebound into the bottom corner.
This is Harman. Ronaldo wins it back. Now can he find Rivaldo? Yes, he can. Rivaldo! Oh, it's come off Kahn! Ronaldo! Brazil in front! It's Ronaldo!
It's so cruel, but it's the instincts of Ronaldo. It's just to follow up that, because it does, it's a fairly tame shot, as in it's quite routine. It's at Kahn.
Yeah.
So most people, especially like you said, the tournament that Kahn's having, you probably wouldn't have gambled and gone, he's going to spill this.
Yeah.
But right place, right time, and he just taps in. But it is cruel. It did. I remember thinking that at the time. And it's rare for me to have sympathy for a German player.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, not now.
Yeah. What a time to make your mistake. And he comments on it, which we'll get to in extra time. But he comments on it and how it affected him. But ultimately, the first mistake he'd made all tournament.
Yeah.
And he makes it in the World Cup final in front of Ronaldo.
Mm.
Like that ball could have spilt anywhere.
Exactly,
it?
Yeah. That's where you want Kleberson or Gilberto Silva on the end of it.
But. Exactly, yeah. Kleberson actually took a part in the second goal. He passed towards Rivaldo just outside the German penalty area. Rivaldo let the ball go through his legs. Brilliant. And the pace on Kleberson's pass found Ronaldo. Asamoah, the German defender, attempted to block the shot, but Ronaldo used his first touch, brilliant touch, to take the ball away from him and struck the ball into the bottom corner like it's a training game.
Kleberson. Rivaldo's dummy. Ronaldo! It's 2-0! And Ronaldo is rampant now! Resplendent Ronaldo!
It's such a good finish.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The whole movement is worth going and looking on YouTube. Because also, this is the tournament, I think, that convinces Alex Ferguson to buy Kleberson, who obviously doesn't really go on to do anything for United particularly.
Yeah.
But he was so good this final, so good. And you see him rampaging down, like you say, down the right-hand side.
Yeah, yeah.
Rivaldo's presence of mind to just dummy and let the ball go through.
So good.
And like you say, it's not... It reminds me, it's a different first touch, but David Villa in Champions League final against Man United, where he like stops the ball with his soul, rolls it in front of him and then picks out the top corner. It has shades of that, but it's a different technique where it's almost like a bumper car. The ball comes in, Ronaldo's first touch just lets it hit off his foot
yeah.
about a meter away, and then he just steps through. It's just so good.
The absolute absence of his awareness of pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, like, that's a World Cup final. This would be going through my head. It's a World Cup final. If I score this, the game's probably done. Yeah. You know, 15 minutes to go. But none of that seems to go through his head. It's so casual,
yeah.
but so clinical. It doesn't look like Matt Le Tissier where he doesn't care.
No, and it's setting itself up for a very good first-time hit, other than the fact there's a German player in the way. But most players are going to snatch at that and hope that they can get it past the player.
Yeah.
It's that first touch which does the German defender. But, like, yeah, it's not an awkward position. He doesn't take the first touch in order to make it hittable. It's come signed, sealed, and delivered with an invitation, like, hit me, and he still, like you say, takes that extra touch. It is genius.
You assume it essentially uses the first touch to beat the defender.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, like, most people don't think like that.
Unbelievable.
So anyway, Ronaldo's redemption complete. He scored his 7th and 8th goals in the final to ultimately give Brazil the World Cup. Germany did push back. They had chances through Christian Ziger. He had a late opportunity to try and get Germany back in the game, but Brazil ultimately saw the game out pretty easily, and they became World Cup champions again.
Wow.
And we head, not like this final, to extra time.
Well, you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So, the first and only country to have won the World Cup 5 times, Brazil, still unmatched to this day. Incredible achievement for them. And ultimately, they could have won it more times than that if, you know, the Ronaldo story had happened differently. But they got their 5th trophy. They became the only team since Argentina in 86 to win the trophy without needing a penalty shootout.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Nice little fact, that one. I wouldn't have guessed that, although I could have probably worked out the Argentina thing, but penalties, were they a thing? Oh, they were a thing.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah, but they just didn't need them. They also became the first team to win every match at a World Cup since 1970, when they did it, and set a new record for the highest aggregate goal difference for a World Cup winner.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, because that is so rare to win every game.
Yeah.
Like you said, only Brazil 70 and then this Brazil team did it. But
so they had a plus 14.
Just frightening.
Not bad, is it?
Which makes you understand, looking back, that Germany were, like you said, a hell of a team, but they still weren't favourites, even though they had been very convincing. But when you look at those stats, you kind of just go, oh, okay, Brazil was steamrolling everyone, really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So on to Oliver Kahn, poor old Oliver Kahn. He was awarded the Golden Ball for the best individual player of the tournament as a whole, and he became the only goalkeeper to receive that award. Speaking about his role in Brazil's opening goal, Kahn said, "It was my only mistake in the entire World Cup finals. It was 10 times worse than any mistake I've ever made then or since. There's no way I can make myself feel any better or make my mistake go away."
Ugh.
Heartbroken.
Yeah, it's just the regret, isn't it?
It is.
But I wonder if, in a weird way, like, he obviously had played in many, many finals in lots of different tournaments. And I just think, like, is he so calm? He's thinking about what to do with the ball next. Like, the ball's heading towards him. He's already thinking, right, am I kicking this long? Am I throwing it quickly? Yeah. Am I countering? And, like, it's almost his peace, his lack of nerves, where he's not overthinking the catch that's coming in.
I'm sure he's analysed it so many times. But, yeah, I mean, so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and so out of character.
And what a time to do it. That's the worst part. Well, it's like I know it's very different, but it's like the Gerrard slip.
Yeah.
Never done it before. Never done it since. Like, you know,
it's just cruel.
9 times out of 10, you've been like, yeah, that'll be fine. Yeah. Oliver Kahn, that'll be fine.
Yeah.
But not at all. Rudi Völler, who was the German manager,
along
with his assistant, Frank Rijkaard. It's not true.
They kissed and made up. They actually went on to form a great managerial partnership.
Rudi Völler, who was combing the spit out of his hair, he exonerated Oliver Kahn, however, saying he has played a dream World Cup. He has made sensational saves, which no one could have expected. Regarding Germany's defeat, he also said, "When you lose a game, the disappointment is great, of course, but it is no shame to lose against a team like this in Brazil."
Oh, that's good. Rudi Völler, one of the good guys.
Absolutely.
It's nice he didn't throw him under the bus. Because like you say, like 3 1-on-1s against Ronaldo, he actually stopped it from being potentially...
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
the game could have been over.
5-0 loss.
Absolutely. So there we go, the 2002 World Cup. Just for me to say this, to set up the future. The next World Cup meeting between the two sides at a World Cup...
Is it the 7-1?
...took place at the semi-finals of the 2014 tournament, which was held in Brazil. In a game described by Simon Burnton of The Guardian as being of a savagery unwitnessed against significant opposition in the tournament's history.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it any better than that. That
it's
is perfect.
Bad, is it? Yeah.
A perfect summation of what it was.
So there we go, ladies and gentlemen. That is the 2002 World Cup. Ronaldo's redemption complete.
Perfect. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoy listening to that. Please join us next week to find out more.